3 minutes they were in the air again, but the Wankel had had 5 minutes clear start. There was no sign of it. They were heading southeast towards Fort Beaver, Algy pointed out. I know, I know. I don't get the hang of this at all, muttered Biggles with a worried frown. If they've stolen the gold, they've got a bit of a nerve to go back to Fort Beaver. It's got me beat, and that's a fact. Half an hour later, Fort Beaver Aerodrome was in sight. There's the Wankel, said Biggles as he cut the engines. And that's McBain and Ferroni beside it, and yes, that's Delaney. Their run-in carried them very close to the Wankel. A strange expression crept over Biggles' face, but he made no observation until he had switched off in front of the hangar. Well, he said, in an odd tone of voice, what do you make of that?
Make of what? Asked the others together.
Look, they're unloading the Moose Creek gold boxes, went on Biggles. They haven't stolen the gold after all. He passed his hand wearily over his face and shook his head. That knocks all our calculations sideways, doesn't it? I mean, they've actually had the gold in their possession with nothing to prevent them getting cleared away with it. Yet they bring it back here and calmly hand it over like law-abiding citizens. We'd better go inside and put our thinking caps on. For the remainder of the day and far into the night, they discussed the problem with no apparent solution. At daybreak, they resumed the debate, but Biggles broke off long enough to send Smith to the village shopping. Then he continued. All this talk of gold reminds me. We've still got Moses Poker gold dust in our machine. We'd better put it somewhere safe so we can hand it over to the authorities. I don't feel inclined to tear around at this moment looking for Moses' daughter. We'll tell Delaney about it next time he comes up here.
There's a secret cavity under my office floor, said Wilkes. I had it specially made for valuables.
The small bag of gold was accordingly fetched from the machine and put into Wilkes's hiding place. The task done, they returned to the tarmac.
Go and brew a dish of coffee, Ginger, said Biggles. I reckon we could all do with a cup.
Ginger nodded and made his way to the back of the hangar where the cooking stove had been installed. The others were still waiting for the coffee when, to Biggles' astonishment, Constable Delaney appeared, walking towards them, followed by McBain and Ferroni. What the dickens do they want? Growled Algy.
We shall soon know, murmured Biggles.
Morning, Delaney, he called cheerfully. The constable, carbine across his arm, came to a halt a couple of paces away and regarded the three airmen with an expression of shrewd suspicion. His eyes came to rest on Wilkes.
Any objection to my searching your outfit?
I'm searching it anyway.
Wilkes waved a conscience-free hand.
Help yourself, he said.
You've had a look around McBain's outfit for whatever it is you've lost, I presume?
Put in Biggles.
Delaney threw him a sidelong glance.
I have, and I found nothing, he admitted.
Well, you won't find it here.
You talk like you know what I'm looking for, stated Delaney.
If I had one guess, and if I hadn't seen the boxes being unloaded yesterday, I should say it's the Moose Creek bullion. But you won't find gold here.
Funny thing, though, went on Biggles, easily. I should have thought that if those boxes had been empty, you'd have noticed it yesterday.
They weren't open till they got to Edmonton, returned the constable curtly. They were full of lead.
In a flash, Biggles understood the meaning of McBain's detour. The gold had been removed from the boxes at the isolated cabin and lead substituted. There was one thing he could not understand, though.
I thought the boxes were always sealed at Moose Creek.
Quite right, returned the constable. And the seals were intact when the boxes were taken out of McBain's machine.
I don't see how or where we could have got near the gold, protested Biggles.
You're the only other outfit, besides McBain's, that was at Moose Creek yesterday and here. You're under suspicion till the dust is found, said Delaney firmly.
While he had been speaking, he had walked into the office, his keen eyes scrutinizing the walls, the floor, and the furniture. He was striding towards a large cupboard when he stopped dead in his tracks, in the middle of a small rug. He stamped. The boards rang hollow. In a flash, he had whipped the rug aside, disclosing the trapdoor of Wilkes's secret locker. Biggles suddenly remembered Moses Gold. He saw their danger instantly and hastened to rectify the oversight, but his very haste was in itself suspicious.
Oh, yes. I forgot. There is some gold in there.
Delaney's eyes hardened and he reached for his revolver.
Oh, yeah? A pile of gold's the sort of thing you easily forget? Huh? I was waiting for you to come along to tell you all about it, said Biggles, realizing with dismay how thin the story sounded. The constable knelt down, pulled the trap aside, and lifted out a heavy doeskin bag. As he stared at it, his whole manner became tense. Suddenly, he tossed the bag onto the table, and whipping out his revolver, covered the three airmen menacingly. You dirty skunks, he snarled. Stand still.
Why, that's the doeskin Pogo Moe's all have used, cried McBain.
Yes, and his initials are on it, grated Delaney.
Now we know who killed Moe's, and why.
Just a minute, Delaney. You've got this all wrong, protested Biggles desperately. Don't jump to conclusions. We were going to give it to Moe's daughter. McBain burst into a roar of laughter.
By thunder, that's a good one.
Angus Sterling gave us that gold yesterday, when we told him Moe's was dead, said Biggles quietly.
What's this? Cried Delaney. Are you trying to tell me you saw Angus yesterday? He's on Eskimo Island and froze in.
He may be now, but he wasn't yesterday. As he spoke, Biggles realized, with increasing horror, just what Angus's isolation was likely to mean to them. As a witness, he might as well not exist, for it wouldn't be possible to make contact with him for 6 months. There was even nothing to prove that Angus had given them the transfer with his own hands. Delaney jerked his head towards the door.
Get going, he said. We've got a place for your sort. Wait a minute! There's another one of them, cried McBain suddenly. Where's the kid?
As if in answer, the Jupiter's engines burst into life. Delaney cursed and dashed outside, but the machine was already on the move. He blazed away with his revolver, McBain and Ferroni joining in with theirs.
You kill that kid, and it'll be the worst day's work you've ever done, shouted Biggles furiously.
But to his heartfelt relief, he saw the Jupiter climb into the air, untouched. The constable whirled round.
March, he ordered. Anyone who tries to make a break for it won't know what hits him.
It was a grim journey to Fort Beaver. Algy raged. Wilkes strode along, glowering his annoyance. Biggles was irritated, but endeavoured to preserve a calm front. The fact of the matter was, not one of them realized the real seriousness of their position. Nor did they imagine it possible that they would be tried by any but an official court of law. Approaching Fort Beaver, McBain hurried ahead. Biggles attached no special significance to this at the time, but before very long he realized what the man's purpose had been. Except for this, things might have turned out very differently. The first indication of McBain's errand occurred while the prisoners were still some distance from the town. Several men appeared, hurrying towards them in a manner that was definitely hostile. Muttering and casting malevolent glances at the prisoners, they joined the party. Others soon appeared.
Keep close to me. I don't like the look of things, muttered Delaney. If this crowd takes things in their own hands, you won't stand a dog's chance.
I don't know what set them off like this. McBain, probably, replied Biggles. More and more men were hurrying out from the village to meet them, and the noise swelled in volume. Above the medley of sound, odd phrases could be heard.
String 'em up, the dirty murderers, yelled an old man. Like we did in the old days.
Hand them over, Delaney, roared another.
Fetch a rope, somebody.
That's it, hang 'em, bellowed McBain.
A stone was thrown, striking Delaney on the temple. At the sight of blood, the noise died down for a moment, and the constable seized the opportunity.
What's gone wrong with you? He shouted furiously. Would you hang a man without a fair trial?
Yes, bellowed a miner in reply.
Give him a trial, and the lawyers will help him dodge the noose.
Old Moe's made his home here in Fort Beaver. It's up to us to deal with his killers.
Who said they killed Moe's? Roared Delaney.
Brindle McBain says so, screeched a woman.
He seems mighty anxious to get you hanged, muttered Delaney to Biggles.
The sight too anxious.
He looked at the clamoring crowd.
If we don't make the jail, they'll lynch you. It's our only chance. Follow me.
With Delaney leading, they dashed pell-mell down the rear of some frame buildings and raced towards a heavily built log cabin. A single iron-barred window plainly announced its purpose. The crowd, initially taken by surprise by this sudden move, surged close behind, yelling wildly. Several shots were fired, but they went wide, flecking up the earth or ripping splinters from the wooden buildings. Delaney was feeling in his pocket for the key, even before they reached the jail.
As he was fumbling with the lock, McBain fired, and a bullet thudded into the logs. Biggles whirled round and fired four quick shots over the head of the crowd, and while it did not stop their progress, it delayed them long enough. They all rushed inside, Delaney slamming the massive door behind them and locking it. "Where did you get that gun?" he asked angrily. "You should have searched me," answered Biggles simply. The constable did not pursue the subject, but ducked as a stone whirled through the window. It struck the opposite wall with a crash and fell to the floor. A piece of paper was tied to it. Delaney picked it up and, in the fast waning light, read the message written on the paper. "It's from that fellow of yours, Smith," said Delaney. "He's taken my horse and is going to Blackfoot Point for help. There's an officer and four troopers there," he added. "Someone in the crowd must have given them the tip." "How far away is this place?" asked Biggles. "Oh, a bit over 20 miles. We can't expect help before dawn, and I reckon that'll be too late." A sudden shout came from outside.
"Get a log, somebody! We'll soon have the door down!"
"Here they come! With a tree!" shouted Delaney presently, and levelling his revolver, fired two shots out of the window. There came a furious yell from outside, and the two shots were answered by a dozen. Delaney staggered back, clutching his upper arm.
"They got me through the shoulder!" snarled the constable, leaning against the wall.
A moment later, the whole building shook as a heavy weight struck the door with a crash. Biggle's jaw set. Revolver in hand, he crept to the window and peeked out. Four men were just lifting the heavy log, which was being used as a battering ram. Biggles fired, and the nearest man staggered, dropping the log. Again, Biggles fired. Another man fell, prompting a general dash for cover. Biggles leapt aside as a fusillade of answering shots came. The acrid smell of cordite filled the room. Several times, as the night wore on, the attack on the jail was resumed, but on each occasion it was narrowly beaten off by the defenders.
"With luck, we'll last one more attack," announced Delaney during a pause.
"Then how so?" asked Biggles.
"I've only one cartridge left."
"And I've none. My gun's empty," said Biggles quietly, tossing the useless weapon on the floor. "I wonder what Ginger's up to," he added hopelessly. Algy looked up. "Gosh, I'd forgotten about Ginger," he confessed. "What could he do, do you suppose?" Biggles shrugged his shoulders. "Goodness knows."
"Can't be far short of dawn," remarked Delaney. "Sort of quiet out there. What are they planning now?"
"We shall soon know, I fancy," replied Biggles, as the sound of stealthy footsteps came from outside. There was a sudden rush, then silence. An orange light flickered on the window frame, growing rapidly brighter. It was accompanied by a crisp, crackling sound.
"They've set the place on fire," gasped Biggles.
"Either we go out and hang, or stay here and fry."